Welcome to another insightful episode of The Textual Talk. I'm your host, Unri, and we got our co-host today, Destiny, rocking with us. Today, we're diving deep into a topic that weighs heavily on many minds in the job search process. In this episode, we tackle the tough questions and share practical advice on navigating the often daunting journey of job hunting, particularly in the tech and cybersecurity fields. We discuss why finding a new job can take anywhere from 3 to 6 months or longer. We'll also explore the critical role of networking, strategic planning, and resume optimization. You'll hear us debunk the myth that applying to countless jobs increases your chance of success, and we emphasize the importance of focusing on relevant positions and tailoring your applications. Unri sheds lights on the benefits of obtaining entry-level positions at reputable companies that offer tuition reimbursement, while Destiny shares her personal journey of entering cybersecurity through a master's degree program. We'll also address the controversial topic of job training programs, certifications, and whether they are worth your time or money. We'll chat about quality engagement on LinkedIn, building a robust personal brand, and leveraging connections to find referrals to the jobs that you want to apply to. Whether you're just starting out, contemplating a career change, or looking to climb that ladder in your current field, this episode is brimming with valuable insights and tips to help you succeed. So don't forget to follow us, leave a comment, and enjoy the podcast. All right, man. This is late night live stream. Let me open these comments up and have people put a one if they can see us. Decided to go live today. We've been so busy. I was like, we ain't gonna have a lot of time to pre-record this joint this week. I was like, let's just go live on the nights that we record late and then just see if, you know, that carves out a little late night tech show for y'all. And we'll go with it like that. But if y'all not familiar with us, I am HD. I'm a cybersecurity professional, content creator, podcaster, career coach, you name it. And we got our co-host right here. Let's see if she's going to list her accolades or not.
N.A., I'm just kidding. Hi, guys. I am Cyber Shorty, a.k.a. Destiny. I'm also a security professional. I'm that girl. That's it.
She forgot that she's like a professor.
I am. I do. I teach at a local community school, cybersecurity there. I write books. I do a lot. Jack of all trades.
Bet. Somebody said you got some people here. Surprise stream. Yeah, man. So right now we are streaming live on YouTube and Twitter. So if you can comment wherever you're watching from, let us know. And like I said, if you're watching on YouTube, hit the like button, subscribe, bell icon and everything. And for the people that's eventually going to hear this on Spotify or, you know, Apple Podcasts or whatever, leave us a review, comment. Y'all know what to do. And whatever you did to your lighting, Destiny, it did make you like look darker. Like it was perfect early. I don't know what happened.
Okay, let's
like a light bulb went out or something. But while Destiny is trying to figure out her lighting, I'm pretty sure most of y'all just watched the game, one of the NBA finals. And of course, the home team won. I don't think it's still going to say, like, just because Boston won game one that they're going to take the whole thing. So we just got to see. I think it's a good series. Dallas fought back, I think, within like 10 or 9. And then, you know, Boston with them get back, like catch back up to like even tie. So that's good. They stayed on their neck. So in this series, I possibly see at least for the first 4 games, both teams protecting home court. So I can see this probably going 6 or 7. I don't got no horse in the race. I probably would rather, you know, I ain't really got nothing against Jason Tatum, but I think I want Kyrie to win another one just because I feel like he was done wrong for stuff that he really didn't do that bothered anybody. So yeah. Go Mavs. Good game one for the Celtics. And, you know, it's a long series. You know, best of 4. So, briefly, it is, Friday's Eve. Well, and some
Friday
people,
Eve, place, sure.
It's already Friday for them if they're on the East Coast. And, you know, on Thursday nights, that's when, like, our good shows drop. So, of course, you got Shut the Shy. And then Power is back today. So, we're not going to go on a super long tangent for that. I'm definitely waiting to see what they plan to do with Tariq and Noma. And what's the girl name that tell all the secrets?
No. What girl?
Monet's daughter. I can't think of her name.
I can't think of her. She what is her name?
Diana. Effie, Kane, Drew.
I'm ready for Tyreek and Kane. I know. I love Kane. I'm ready for Kane to see how he finna act this season. The most hated.
Probably dumb as usual.
Absolutely.
it's all good. And then you got real quick before we get into the tech stuff, the latest episode of Shy is coming up. Now there's a fan theory where people think that Keisha's baby daddy is not that man that that died, that kidnapped her. They think it's Nook.
I forgot about that depressing entire season where she was trapped in that house. Like, it was just such a tough season to get through.
It was, but it's possible that it could possibly be Nook. Because, you know, she was texting him when she got abducted.
Yep. She was.
And, you know, the baby is fair-skinned, too, so.
Now, that would be a situation, for sure. I'm into the Shy this season. It's been pretty consistent. It hasn't been any like, why did they make that episode?
Yeah. It's been, like I said, compared to, I got something to show the camera in a second, but compared to BMF, it's been, like I said, a breath of fresh air. And I meant to send you the screenshot earlier because I was laughing at it. It says T telling Spence how him and Meech is spending the crunch after they get back from Mexico. Let me see. I was like, bruh, they be killing me with this stuff. But I'm going to go ahead and I guess I'll let you get into your first topic about the risk of paying ransomware. That's what you want to get into real quick.
Let's see. Yes. So the title of this article is PandaBuy Pays Ransom to Hacker Only to Get Extorted Again. So PandaBuy is an online platform that acts as an intermediary between customers and various Chinese e-commerce websites. It allows users to purchase products from those websites, which are often cheaper or have unique items that may not be available somewhere else, and they can pretty much get it shipped to their location. So on March 31st, a threat actor using the alias Sanagerio published 3 million rows of data stolen from PandaBuy on breach forums. And so they exposed customer names, phone numbers, email addresses, logon IP addresses, home addresses, and order details. The threat actor claimed that they managed to steal the data by exploiting several critical vulnerabilities in the PandaBuy API. The data was shared with the data breach notification service, Have I Been Pawned, which added 1.35 million email addresses from the incident to its system. So on June 3rd, the same threat actor offered to sell what he claimed was the entire database that he previously stole from PandaBuy for $40,000. It allegedly contained 17 million rows, indicating a much larger data set. But the spokesperson for PandaBuy said that they paid the bad actor a undisclosed amount to stop the data leak, adding that the threat actor may have shared the data with others so they would no longer cooperate with him. So Bleeping Computer reached out to the bad actor about the company's statement, but it's not heard back. For now, it is better to take an abundance of caution and be on the lookout for unsolicited messages from people claiming to be PandaBuy. So what do I think of that? I think it's funny. I was talking to my brother the other day, and he said he thinks it's funny how someone can pretty much punk you for your stuff and you pay them for it and you still not get your stuff back. And that's exactly what happened in this incident. And that's what happens a lot of the times, which brings up the fact of, should you pay ransomware? What is the risk that you take if you don't pay the ransom?
Yeah, so the risk is the fact that you incentivize people to keep stealing from you. It's
or it's asking for more money.
Right. So like when you're dealing with kids in school, let's say like they keep on getting in the fights or something, you got a kid that's not gonna fight back or something or whatever. They're gonna keep on picking on them because they're not protecting themselves. So eventually you're gonna say, all right, one of two things gonna happen. They're gonna keep on bullying you, or you're gonna either punch them, or you're gonna pick some up and you're gonna, you know, knock them out. And usually when you bully the bully, they leave you alone. So in this case, you gotta protect yourself, your company's data, make sure you got good backups, figure out how they got in. If you can do away with that, you know, there is I read an article for a company where they helped one of their clients where they got hit with ransomware. It was a manufacturing company. And so they had backups on hand. They worked with makeshift like paper templates for a while. Eventually, I think, 3 or 4 months after that, you know, they got them a more secure cloud environment and it was good to go. So sometimes you just got to bite the bullet because it's like, if you keep on like paying them, it's going to incentivize everybody else to come at you. And like, ain't nothing you could really do about it either, except either fortify your systems or keep on trying to like share out the money. Granted, sometimes it's not on you. It's on those third parties. Like we've been seeing this whole year so far.
For sure. I think it's just insane how you can get punked and someone be like, give me that. I'm not giving. No, someone took your stuff and they said, I'm not giving it back until you pay me some money. You pay them the money and they say, I think you should give me a little bit more. If you already can give me what I asked for, why you can't give me a little bit more? And then that might just continue on to be a cycle. Now, that obviously doesn't happen every time, but that is one of the risks that you do take when you do pay the ransom. Or you can get a key that's not even the key. So they tricked you. They finessed you. It's a lot of finessing going on in the cyber industry for sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't even put it past them to say it's some like backhanded like stuff that people letting happen, you know, for real, like on the low, just so you can't like just so you can keep job security. We just call this thing like job security.
Oh, for sure.
Some gotta keep breaking. So tax keep happening. Somebody's money, this company right here that comes in and deals with incident response and all these different retainers that keep money. When you take 5 steps back, something's going on. So, I mean, if everything was good, you wouldn't even have a need for these companies. So, I mean, that's a cynical way of looking at it, but it's one of the things that I actually do believe. And
I'm interested in understanding more about cybersecurity insurance because I know they're not going for that, you know, like multiple attempts. Even if they're going for it once, they're not going for that twice.
Right. And you know what? You actually got a good, not good mindset on it, but expertise in this because that's the industry you used to work in and mm-hmm. insurance. Yeah. And you know all about people probably doing multiple claims or insurance. Like, look, you having too many wrecks. We not finna pay you anymore for any of that stuff.
Kicking you out. Kicking you out. You go find someone else. That's exactly what they'll do. Once you start acting too crazy with the claims, once they start getting too excessive or anything that's suspicious, like, why have you been in 10 accidents this year? What is going on? You're too risky for us.
Yeah, I've seen that. Then look, insurance be $1,000+ a month.
Ooh.
I don't know. Matter of fact, this is just a random question. You were doing claims though. So were you able to see like what people's like insurance was like per month and stuff? Or were you dealing with like houses?
No.
What were you dealing with?
Cars.
Okay.
People getting hurt. Yeah. No, we don't get to see any of that or didn't get to see any of that. Any recollection. Like, we don't even care how much your insurance is. We're just trying to figure out who was in the car and what happened.
Yeah. So I want you to touch on the Snowflake incident because that's the big one. Funny enough, one of my followers where we follow each other on Twitter actually just made a post about Snowflake may possibly be like one of the bigger breaches that no one's talking about. And he reposted with that conceited GIF. And so I want you to touch on it and then I'll read my Snowflake article and then we can like talk a little bit more about it.
Okay. So the title of this particular article is "Hundreds of Snowflake Customer Passwords Found Online Are Linked to Info Stealing Malware." So a Snowflake is a cloud data analysis company, and obviously they're at the center of an alleged data theft. So its corporate customers are scrambling to understand if their stores of cloud data, their stores of cloud data have been compromised. Snowflake does help some of the largest global corporations. So if you think about banks, healthcare providers, also tech companies, and they're storing and analyzing a ton of their data, such as their data in the cloud. So last week, Australian authorities sounded the alarm, saying they had become aware of successful compromises of several companies that were utilizing Snowflake environments. So they didn't provide the name of the companies, but hackers had claimed on a known cybercrime forum that they had stole hundreds of millions of customer records from Santander Bank and Ticketmaster. Ticketmaster was just breached, last week? Two of Snowflake's biggest customers, Santander, confirmed a breach of a database hosted by a third-party provider, but would not name the provider in question. On Friday, Live Nation confirmed that its Ticketmaster subsidiary was hacked and the stolen database was hosted on Snowflake. Snowflake did acknowledge in a brief statement that it was aware of potentially unauthorized access to a limited number of customer accounts without specifying which one, but they found no evidence that there was a direct breach of its systems. But despite the sensitive data that Snowflake holds, they do let each customer manage the security of their environments, and they don't automatically, here's the kicker, enroll or require its customers to use MFA. Not enforcing the use of MFA appears to be how cyber criminals allegedly obtain huge amounts of data from some of their customers. That is really just a quick summary of what happened. Insane. Here we go again. Another story of somebody not having MFA implemented.
Yeah, I wish I could play like another one, Bites the Dust.
Another one, Bites the Dust. Womp womp.
The funny thing, what I do know about Snowflake is, so they've hired two of the big guns to pretty much look at their whole environment. I want to say they got Mandiant, that's pretty much Google Cloud now, and they also, I believe, have CrowdStrike. You can fact check me on that one if anybody in the comments is familiar with what's going on here. But yeah, it's always coming down to MFA.
I'm over talking about MFA every week and how somebody doesn't have it implemented. It should be a requirement for all users for the 15,000th time we've seen this year. Just make it a requirement, and that's one less thing you have to worry about.
Yeah, so I was going to also say the irony in all this is, like, I have an episode I did on identity and access management, and one of the quotes that JK said on there was like how credentials and everything is always at the center of like every attack. And that's what you always seeing with when these accounts get popped. It's like MFA in whatever way. I'm pretty sure it's going to be pretty interesting on what they did to actually breach Snowflake and pretty much get everybody, because they got some notable companies in there. And I wanted to read like one of the companies who allegedly data is for sale is Advanced Auto Parts. And I'm actually going to talk about them in a second. And I was going to tell you, Destiny, I think you had this option to do this too, but you can present at the bottom so you don't have to just read like that. Let me try to zoom in for people so they can see too. So it says that major U.S. automotive aftermarket parts vendor Advanced Auto Parts had 3 terabytes of data containing sensitive customer and employee details claimed to be stolen by the threat actor dubbed Spider following the compromise of his Snowflake cloud storage environment, reports Bleeping Computer. So including in a trove of information being sold for $1.5 million is 380 million customer profiles, 140 million customer orders, 44 million loyalty gas card numbers, data from, man, they got everything. Employment, candidate details, and transactions, tender data, according to Spider. Other Snowflake customers were also alleged by a threat actor to have had their data exfiltrated since the intrusions began mid-April. Mid-April. And so the intrusions began then, they probably was in, February. But have since paid the demands of their attackers. Such a development comes after both recent breaches of Ticketmaster and Santander Bank, like you just said, were linked to compromised Snowflake accounts, with the cloud storage firm attributing the incidents to the targeting of organizations without MFA. Yep, so that's pretty much what you were saying too. It's crazy.
I'm just here to say, you yourself, make sure you got MFA enabled wherever you can have it enabled at. This is insane. It's insane. It costs hackers, bad actors, whatever you want to call them, it costs them so much more to try to compromise your account when you have MFA enabled and enforced. So keep that in mind. And we'll be here probably the next time talking about another MFA story for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because it's like Snowflake should mandate that, but it's also on the companies like, hey, we need to make sure we have that mandated. But even when you have MFA enabled, they still get popped sometimes, because if you have it set up to where it's sending you pushes, if they have the right credentials, they're just going to keep on putting them in until somebody hit yes.
Yep.
We see that all the time.
So basically the user isn't reporting the MFA request is fraud.
Right. Because think about it. Sometimes they're doing, I mean, they're not going to do it when you're alert. A lot of these times they're trying to log into your account when you're sleeping. Like, they're thinking about a time you may be asleep or something. So you roll over and you see, it's like, dang, I don't recognize this. So.
I mean, it's not a foolproof. Absolutely not. But, you know, better to have it than not have it.
Right. 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 So I think the funner one that we got a lot of people on Twitter here on the live stream is, we can actually talk about this job search thing. And I think it popped off when Bees kind of quoted this. So Mr. Cowboy Gripper says he got laid off June 1st, 2023. He created a spreadsheet to track all the roles he's applied to. A year later, he submitted 460 applications. So V says, this is less than 10 applications a week. I recommend people to apply to 10 jobs a day if possible. And this, like, let me see something if we got any like interesting quotes right here. These are people y'all buying, getting the tech courses from. What does that got to do with anything? At the point,
like,
that
what?
463 job applications is not enough to find one job. We need to have serious conversation about where the responsibility lies, because it's not with the people having to fill out 463 applications for dust. Well, after about 100, if you've never gotten an answer, it's probably your resume. I'm going to tell you that straight up. If you didn't get one
resume, not one,
it's your resume.
Yep. You're probably not talking about yourself in the best way. You're not illustrating your skills in the best way. You're not telling the best story about what you actually know and what you're capable of doing. Yeah.
Right. Because I know I have a video. I said 100 jobs told me no, but it was actually more than that. But I interviewed for a lot of those roles. It wasn't just like I applied to like 100 plus and, you know, only heard back from two. I heard back from a lot. Because we're going to talk about this a little bit more in detail, but you can't just apply, spray and pray your way to everything. Like, you need to be strategic. If you're going to apply to a lot of jobs, apply to a lot of jobs that fit your skill set, and not just applying to something because you need something. Or if it's one of the BS jobs, you just need to get a job to be on your feet. Like, you got to go work at a gas station, a Target, or retail, whatever. Go in there and go holler at the manager. You're going to have to do something different. If you apply to that many, ain't nobody said something, you need to ask yourself, like, what is going on? And good thing is, I do got content on this channel that's about, like, stuff like that with your resume and different things that you need to do to possibly be seen by recruiters. So it's more so on you than them, especially if it's bad.
Yeah, and try to be, like you said, applying to jobs that are kind of similar, like, so that you can use that one resume. Because if you're applying for something that's vastly different, if you're applying to be a pen tester, but you got just only help desk stuff on there, you're not telling the best story.
Right. And goodbye to the worst website online. He got to be talking about Twitter. We are still pretending that applying for a job involves sending off your CV as opposed to answering multiple essay questions and sending a cover letter to see if you get a telephone interview, to see if you get a technical assessment. That's not all the way true. You have Easy Apply. You have a lot of AI tools now that will help you. Like, for example, if you use a tool like Teal, I know we're trying to work on some. If you're listening right now, come spin the block. Teal, if you have your resume inside of Teal on certain job applications, it'll fill everything out for you. And then if you have a good enough resume, when you upload it, it's going to pretty much parse everything. So you may have to answer 15, 20 questions in total. Sometimes you just upload the resume and hit submit. So you can do it. All you got to do is, you could probably spend, my tips is to either apply late at night or early in the morning, maybe take an hour or two and apply. Now, for the jobs you really want to have like success in, you need to tailor some things in your resume, or if you got some highlighted bullet points, like swap them out and apply like that. And that's just the first part. That's just applying. We're not even going to get into some of the other stuff that I'll say you need to do. My boy Jermaine said, folks are coming at the bees for pointing out what works. I get it. It's not right or fair that people have to go through this to get a job. But the reality is this. It's what works right now. Two things can be true, and bees ain't a villain for being real. I agree.
I mean, people think it's not just a walk in the door. You're not going to just walk in here and make six figures. Like, it don't work like that. You need to put in the time. And half of that is just getting the interview.
Yeah. The funny thing is, she said the dude in the main tweets really like kind of thanked her for her advice. So it's like, you know, you can't please that. And since, let me see. Since we're already on this topic, I'm going to go right here. This is not it. Okay. This is not it. Oops. Hang on. Let me open it. I thought that was the tweet. Let me present it real quick, y'all.
I just can't.
I think it's this one. Okay, so I don't even know what she does, but she said, my job 100% asks me to post jobs that they already have chosen a person for to make it appear we have equitable hiring practices. I think that's what a lot of companies are doing. And this is true.
That is what they're doing.
They do this a lot. Like,
but they have to.
Yeah.
They have to legally post it. They have to. And so I don't think it's illegal for them to know or have an idea of people that they're interested in. They still, at the end of the day, have to interview. They still have to have a good interview. You know, they still have to meet the qualifications, requirements, whatever it is. But that's why it's who you know. That's why people say that. It's not what you know. It's who you know. It's what you know too still, but it's who you know for sure.
Yeah. And I've heard this from the horse's mouth from a director. It's like, you know, if a job comes open, a lot of times they're probably going to move it internal, but they got to post it to say they posted it based on whatever they got to do. So unfortunately, it don't always be like that, but it be like that sometimes.
But and, the post kind of is given, like, maybe they knew somebody who was beneficial, or, you know, if you're in that circumstance and you feel like, you know, a candidate that it's equally as good, and advocate for them. That's simple.
I mean, sometimes out of your hands, because, you know, when it comes to getting hired, everybody got to say yes in that loop. So it's like, do you waste time on the external person that we know we got to pay more, or this internal person that we finna get for a discount that we know can do the job? So that's pretty much what it is. But what I also want to talk about is, now, so we saw the thing the dude said, he's like, he applied to like 53 jobs, something like that.
So somebody said they scamming people on LinkedIn in the comments.
Hey, sometimes they do. Sometimes they're not real postings. If you really serious about the job, go see if it's open on the actual career site of the company. If not,
facts.
And a lot of times the same job that's on a career site would actually be on the company's like LinkedIn page as well too. And so you can kind of try to verify that way. Hopefully. Keyword is hopefully. So I want to share this. I know I only got a couple articles left, Forbes. It's just an article I found. It was like an article I saw earlier. And it was like, it typically takes somebody, a job seeker, 3 to 6 months to find a new job.
I would say a little bit longer than that.
Yeah. Yeah. This market is different. I don't know. And this is the thing, too, that I do like to say with data, because I said on the last episode, just because that's what the data says, that don't mean it's telling the whole story. We don't know what career fields or what these people are in. So it's not absolute that say that's what it should take. For now, if they encompass everything that's been going on in 2024, they may say 3 to 8, 3 to 10 months. I've seen,
I would say 9 to 12. Yeah. Depending on what, you know, especially I think for me, a lot of the people I've been seeing are kind of more so early in career, or they are like well into their career, senior level type of role. So that makes it difficult. Both of those.
Yeah, I agree. That's actually one of the comments that I had earlier. I was like, for a person who have a lot of experience, they got to play the numbers game and exactly. Just try to get in where they fit in. For just if you're going to go strictly off applying. But there are easier ways. You just got to build up your network. So this thing says the latest data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reveals that job seekers who apply for 21 to 80 jobs have about a 30% chance of receiving a job offer. Paradoxically, it was found that the candidates who apply for more than 81 jobs reduced their prospects with a 20% chance of receiving an offer, according to job search website Zipia, which I could see that. If you're not focused, like I said, if you're just applying for any and everything,
that's what you'll be doing. Just clicking on any easy apply, anything to get another app crossed off the list. Yeah.
And I could tell y'all from experience as being a career coach, when I've sat down with my clients and saying, no, okay, what have you applied to? Or we do a consultation. I'm saying, what's the reason jobs you applied to? And I'm looking at your resume versus the job you applied to. I said, one or two things, you don't have these skills or they're not listed on your resume, but this is why you're not getting called back. So I told them, I said, hey, you're going to be more successful if you apply to stuff that it looked like you could possibly do. But if you're trying to apply to all this other stuff, but you don't have no projects, you got no skill sets, none of this other stuff, they're not going to call you back, fam. No matter how good your resume look. And that's why I'm a person that also really fixates on the contents of your resume. Versus just having a nice looking resume. It's like going to get a O2 Crown Vic and putting a new paint on the body, but the motor bad. You ain't finna go nowhere but around the block and then it's gonna stop. And
pretty resumes is really out of style unless you finna hand it to somebody in person. It needs to be as simple, basic as possible.
Well, no, I'm not even talking about that. Like, for example, you're trying to be a security analyst, but your jobs are, you know, you were the stalker at, you know, Walmart. And then after that, you were asset protection, like for 3 years. Don't get me wrong. You can get in a certain type of way. But if that's all you got, you got no certifications, you're going to projects.
No projects.
Yeah. No CTFs.
It looks insane.
I can make it seem like you led. Go ahead.
But you don't know what you don't know. So now that you know, you know. There's some, you can put something in there. You can go on the website, do a couple courses. You can illustrate those skills even if you haven't been hired somewhere to do them yet.
Yep. And I definitely can make, like, I can make it look good. I can make it sound like you're a supervisor and you're a manager and all this other stuff. Now, listen, if you do want to finesse some All right. Just tell them you work cybersecurity at Circus City or Payless, Kmart. Like, them places ain't open no more. So if you want to tell them that you did it there, then by all means, tell them.
Someone in the comments said that they have never heard anything back from Easy Apply. So they fill out the whole application. They rather fill out the whole application.
Right, right. So let's get back to the article. It says, therefore, applying for too many jobs can be self-defeating because although it appears that you're exposing yourself to more opportunities, it actually may diminish your chances of being hired. If you apply to hundreds of jobs, especially within a short space of time, such as 2 or 3 months, there's a high probability that you have merely skimmed through applications, click Easy Apply button, and not be able to give each one intensive, quality, tailored effort. Keep your gaze fixed on the number of applications as though it were the numbers game is misleading, because the more you apply for, the more you reduce the quality and energy you put into your applications, and unless you're able to sell yourself to employees, which is what we talked about. And I think this is kind of, this title may sum up how Buddy was feeling. Destroys your mental health. Applying for roles in a panic apply mode ruins your mental health due to the sheer number of low quality applications you're sending. You could be sure to expect a significant rejection rate via rejection emails and even ghosting, comparable in proportion to the number of applications you've sent out. This can cause depression, stress, and anxiety as you notice that the harder you try, the deeper you sink into the quicksand of unemployment. Receiving a large number of rejection emails in quick succession can injure your self-esteem and confidence and make it harder for you to have the energy to project a strong personal brand image to the next employer.
I think so. I love the part where they said, I feel like it's like you, once you get all those rejections, you start to get like rejection fatigue, like, or you become, okay, whatever, next. And like, you don't think and stop, okay, I got 57 rejections. I need to pivot. I need to do something different, because it just becomes so normal for you, desensitized from those rejections. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I've been through that, especially when I was, I wasn't getting a lot. Mine was different because I was going through processes or knowing I was a good fit and they didn't want to pay. I know for a fact a lot of them didn't want to pay me at the time what I should have been getting paid for some of the roles. I already knew how I was going. They never would never say it. Or, like I said, if we want to be, you know, more nuanced as being Black people, sometimes you've been into, like back in the day, I'm talking about suited and booted, going into the interview with a panel of none more white people, just like, I feel like I'm just here to be their diversity interview person.
Or their personality hire.
Because the people would be laughing at the jokes, you'd be answering stuff good, and then all of a sudden, in 2 weeks, yeah, they decide to go with somebody with more experience. I'm like, you knew my experience before I got the role, and this role don't require for that much experience, so what you talking about?
Yep.
Just say you found somebody that's a better fit. Don't give me, I just do not like that experience piece because that's some bull. Because if you decide to interview me, don't tell me that. Because you can know from the recruiting call, you don't want me.
Exactly. Or my resume.
Now, guys, this is what we alluded to earlier about networking. And let's see what they got to say. According to Zipia, 80% of hires come through networking, not scouring through job boards. Recent estimates also show that 70% of jobs are not posted on widely used job sites, which is a fact. I have this in my ebook. While Deloitte reveals that individuals will need to find others who can help them get better faster, small work groups, organizations, and broader and more diverse social networks. Therefore, it makes more sense to focus on building the quality of your applications and network instead of the mere quantity of applications. So, they nailed it on the head. Let's see if they got anything else that I kind of haven't told anybody already. I guess we can go ahead and go through the whole article for people. Build your personal brand on LinkedIn. Focus on completing your LinkedIn profile and establishing yourself as a sought-after candidate on LinkedIn. Make your profile tailor show your career story and contribute meaningless insight. Hey, they stole this from my ebook. Relevant to your expertise and desired role. Engage meaningfully with others, post, and add significant value through your presence on the platform. And I'll actually add some more onto that. when you start branding yourself, like you say, as a sought after candidate, even if you're a person with no experience, like, for example, the things that Destiny and I were talking about earlier before we got to this subject. If you're young, trying to get into cybersecurity, one of the questions they always ask is, hey, how do you keep up with cybersecurity news? So what you should probably do every day is every time it's a new breach or something out, you want to maybe fixate on one or the people who are behind these breaches. Shoot, you better get in your threat intel bag and start breaking some of these things down and start posting about the breaches and what you would do and maybe how you could attack these from a security engineering standpoint, SecOps, IR, strategy, whatever you want to do. But you can start posting about stuff like that. And what eventually happened is, and while you're building up your LinkedIn, people start noticing that you have a knack for doing that. And whether it's the best like breakdown people have seen, the fact that you're doing it, one day a job you're going to apply to, you're going to see that hiring manager views your page. And he's probably going to ask you about these things in your interview. Or when it comes to maybe wanting to get a referral from somebody and they say, yeah, I'll refer you. I've been really, you know, sitting back and seeing all the stuff that you've been writing about. So I, you know, we'd love to have somebody like you on the team. That's a way to actually get referrals. I already kind of show that you got value. But if I go to your page and I'm not already following you, and the first thing you do when you connect with me is saying, hey, are you hiring or can you refer me or all this other stuff? It's not going to work that good. You got to actually build it up. Like, nobody just build a bridge in one day. It takes baby steps. So you got to lay the foundation and then build that bridge to probably get that referral. But once it's built, you should be good and make sure that network is always warm and make sure it's not just a one-way transaction. Like when recruiters reach out to me for a job or other people, if I'm asking them for something, I'm always saying, hey, if I can never do anything for you, please let me know. Or if it's a job, a recruiter reach out to me that I'm not feeling, or maybe not money not right, I'm like, okay, you know, this is not a good fit for me, but I do know if some qualified applicants, I'm going to send them your way. That's how I start building that bridge to where they think about me and say, hey, yeah, this was your range. You know, we had this open up, you know, let's give them a call if you can. But you got anything to add to that, Des?
I think it's important to also be consistent. Like a lot of the times you're looking for immediate interactions, gratifications, you know, comments, but be consistent with your post and eventually you'll be able to pick up that engagement piece. So don't be afraid if no one likes it. It's okay. Move onward and forward to the next one. This is not Instagram.
Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of already touching on what I said, quality connections. So people that will be on the teams you want to work with, people that are industry leaders, even good content creators that, you know, you can see their work history and the things they talk about. If they got a big following, if they post a lot, that's where you're going to start like making your bones. And listen, I'm going to tell you something that they're not going to say. Be controversial. Be as controversial as you can on LinkedIn. That's, you know, want like respect, but be controversial. Hot takes. Get people to come check out your posts. Say something outlandish. Every time we make a video about the Security Plus, it get views. Know why? Because that is heralded to everybody by Security Plus. And I know exactly what I'm doing. If I title something about you don't need to get Security Plus or this, or that, I know exactly what I'm doing. It's going to force a conversation for people to either say yay or nay, or say maybe we need to kind of come back to this conversation and see what we need to do. Like when I'm always attacking A+ and telling people, hey, you're trying to get into cybersecurity, know the material in a sense, but you don't have to go waste money for that actual exam and cert to get it. Because most of the jobs you look for when you're trying to get into cybersecurity will not have need an A+ on it.
For sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Especially
yeah,
in
right.
cyber.
Skip it. Like you're going to rarely be touching hardware unless you're going to be at one of those companies where you're like the jack of all trades IT person.
Yep.
Let me see. Now, I'm going to see if I agree with this or not. Take time to focus on meticulously tailoring every detail of your application from the research you do into each company, to the keywords you insert throughout your resume, to the examples you provide to support your application. You may only be able to apply for one or two roles a week, but this is more beneficial and laser focused than applying to several hundred within the same period. Ultimately, Applying for hundreds of jobs has proven to be ineffective and is wasting your precious time. The golden range of 21 to 80 as cited in Zipia's study is not about numbers, it's about quality over numbers. Invest your energy and effort into improving your two important assets, your network and your portfolio of application documents. Remember, the success of your search isn't dependent on volume. Less is more. Actually agree. I agree on that. I don't agree that you got to tailor it for everything because some of your resumes may fit just that role that you're applying to. So I would not necessarily say that you would have to tailor it for everything. But for the most part, I do agree with the keywords and speaking to what's on the job description, especially, like I said, if it's roles you're really interested in, do it. But see, what they didn't put in there that I tell you to do is, and I show you this with the group coaching or the one-on-one coaching, we go even past that. We go through, okay, we headhunting, we trying to find a hiring manager, somebody on the team, a recruiter. And there are tricks that I've learned through doing this that I can show you how to find these people that you know what I'm saying? They're not just saying, hey, I work for so-and-so. It's little tricks. You can find them in the job description. And like I said, if you do want to know about that kind of stuff, like getting a group coaching, get a tech resume or something like that, you get access for a year. But those are things that I show you that I've done that you can do that'll at least lead to you getting a response or, you know, an interview eventually. I'm just saying. I think the one that you wanted to touch on after this was, and actually, I've never, shout out to Keotic, man. Appreciate it. For the slice of pizza. Let me see what some of these comments said. That's my guy, man. Listen, hey, speaking of, if you are trying to do help desk tier one, tier two, tier three, definitely go check out Keotic Support's YouTube channel. Greg. I had a client in a group coaching today. He reached out to me. He was ecstatic because he's been getting some interviews and stuff. And he has a tier two help desk interview coming up. He said, how would I prepare for it? I immediately sent him Kevin's YouTube channel. He has pretty much all them questions they're going to ask you. He's broken them down. He got walkthroughs. He got labs. He got everything you would need on his YouTube channel. So you definitely should check that out. You got something to add this?
I was just saying, Ty Grant said, when I was searching, I made three different versions of my resume to match the role that I wanted. And yeah, that's very smart. Depending on how wide your skill set is, you may need to make more than that. But that is very wise to do.
Yeah, I agree. You got three. Like, I got one that's a base. And then, like, for certain ones, I would do my first, last name, underscore the role. Well, whatever role it was or the company, and I would probably change certain things about it. Also, guys, free game. Sometimes what I've seen in certain companies, the title of your job at your company is not a popular role amongst the industry. Like I had a guy, we got a console, we talked before, but he is like a security admin. And I was like, I would figure out what entails your role and map it to a more important term that's like more widely known versus saying a security admin. Cause I'm like, okay, what is a security admin?
I was just going to say it's broad. Yeah.
So you want to get specific and popular with your titles as possible. And that'll help you get a little bit more callbacks. And also if you live close to a bigger city, put the bigger city on there instead of your smaller city too, that'll help you out as well. Especially if it's, you know, commuting distance. Because sometimes they was like, oh, this person don't stay in, you know, Dallas. They stay in Prosper. I'm like, put Dallas on there. It's a DFW. So. Yeah, that's the key because those HR people go crazy with the controversy. Blackjack says, I lost my Udemy certificate on my resume for certs I studied but didn't take official exam. Okay. Cool. I think we got to everything. Let me make sure I didn't miss nobody else. Okay, they're talking about some of the stuff we was talking about in the past. Yo, hey, shout out to my guys right here, man. Menace Material Entertainment. Man, listen, they have like three or four podcasts on their channel. Now, the one I tune into the most is Homeroom University, and they critique like the popular podcasts with like pop culture, and they really be cooking like, I never even asked AJ this yet, but I'm like, whenever I'm out that way, I'm definitely going to see if I can make an appearance on the show. They out there, I believe they're in Charlotte. So shout out to them. Let me see what my guy Kev said real quick. The issue I had with someone who did a call with me is that his resume was tailored to help desk cybersecurity. It's like very misleading. Do you want to work help desk or security? Keep it simple. That's it. Listen.
Yeah.
It too. Or I see somebody that is clearly they are doing help desk stuff, but they changed it to like security engineer or SOC analyst or something like that. And I'm like, bro, I can see that that's not what you're doing at work. Like, just change your title. Ain't going to work. Is not. You'd be better off finding somebody's resume and putting their bullet points on there and hopefully being able to explain them in an interview versus what you're doing.
Yep.
But what I often find out doing all these consults is they are doing a lot of things that are cyber related that they're not aware of. Like, I'm telling you, a lot of help desk people do a lot of identity access management and they are like, I am, and they don't know about it. I'm like, well, why would your boss not tell you you're doing identity access management? Because if they did tell you that, they know they have to pay you more. But because your job says help desk, service desk, desktop support, customer service, whatever it is, they know they don't have to pay you what you deserve to be paid. So that's why you got to always, you know, try to make sure you're not getting finessed. But let's cover that, the TikTok stuff. I think that was pretty interesting. I want to see if I can find the part where they like kind of passed the vulnerability.
All right. So we got celebrity TikTok accounts compromised using zero-click attacks via DM. So popular streaming platform TikTok has acknowledged a security issue that has been exposed by threat actors to take control of high-profile accounts on the platform. The development was first reported by Semaphore in Forbes, which detailed a zero-click account takeover campaign that allows malware propagated via direct messages to compromise brand and celebrity accounts without having to click or interact with it. So the exploit has been found to take advantage of a zero-day vulnerability in the messaging component that allows malicious code to be executed as soon as the message is open. It's currently unclear how many users have been affected, although a TikTok spokesperson said that the company had taken preventative measures to stop the attack and stop it from happening again in the future. The company further said that it's working directly with impacted account holders to restore access and that the attack only managed to compromise a very small number of users. It did not provide any specifics about the nature of the attack or the mitigation techniques it employed. And yeah, these social media attacks are becoming more and more, they're becoming more and more prevalent. Bad actors are becoming smarter. Just simply opening up a message, not even clicking on anything, and the message is crazy. Very crazy. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the article was like they fixed the... somebody said that was an inside job. Where's the article? Yeah, it says TikTok fixes zero-day bug used to hijack high-profile accounts. What day was your article from? Do you know?
This is from yesterday.
Okay. Dang it. So I guess I can probably figure out what they... Let me see something real quick. I'm just really trying to see what the fix was. Because most of the time, I know when other social media accounts and stuff like that, like I know we're always hammering like, you know, MFA. But a lot of times that's really null and void because if they get you, attacker gets you to click on something, they'll just steal your session. And if you can't get back in within the time you need to, then like you get as done because they're going to change your email to theirs. And you're going to have to wait on the support of the social media platform to eventually get your account back.
Yep. Okay, that's the one I was reading. Look at Forbes.
Yeah. They removed Paris Hilton's account from the list of compromised accounts. Yeah, it ain't really saying too much about whatever it was.
The second article I read said that they declined to share more details about the nature of the tech or its countermeasures as to not tip off potential malicious actors.
Bet. So earlier we was talking about y'all ain't gonna believe this, but like, so the LA school district is investigating a data theft claim, and apparently they got access to like a lot of data. And the kicker is, guess how much they're trying to sell it for?
$4 million.
Way less. Let's see. Let me zoom in so make sure people can see it on my end. So the LAUSD officials are investigating a threat actor's claim that they're selling stolen databases containing records belonging to millions of students and thousands of teachers. LAUSD is the second largest public school district in the United States with over 25,900 teachers, roughly 48,700 other employees, and more than 563,000 students enrolled during the 2023-2024 school year. The threat actor selling the allegedly stolen data for $1,000, bro.
That's how you know it's a kid. What? That's a kid. Come on, bro. $1,000.
I'm trying to get a PS5 and the new NCAA.
No, that's a script, kiddie. No grown adult person is doing all that work for $1,000.
That reminded me of like the people when they kept coming to steal from Target. What they'll do is some companies will just let you keep stealing to where you steal so much that the amount is a felony so they can send you to prison versus you just getting off with like, you know, a simple charge. So because attackers always come back to the scene of crime. They always do. It's just psychology. That's why psychology majors actually do pretty good when they come into cybersecurity because they already understand human action. So they says $1,000 says the CSV files put up for sale on a hacking forum contain over 11 gigabytes of data, including over 26 million school records with student information, more than 24,000 teacher records, and around 500 containing staff information. They also shared two data samples containing roughly 1,000 student records with social security numbers, addresses, parent addresses, email addresses. Like I say every day, everybody just need Aura, because at least if this stuff was on the dark web, you'd already know before the school district let you know. Just saying. I'm just saying. Researchers who analyzed these samples told Bleeping Computer that the sold data appears legitimate but could be old, as the data set does not include recent dates. However, the threat actor only shared a small sample of the allegedly stolen data, so there may be new information that's yet to be shared. Bleeping Computer contacted LAUSD earlier today to confirm the threat actor's claims and was told that the public school district is now investigating them. We are looking into this and we'll get back to you if we have further information to share, LAUSD Public Information Officer Britt Vaughn told Bleeping Computer.
I'm just so tickled. I'm so tickled. $1,000 is crazy. As much data as they got for $1,000, they got social security numbers. But if the data is old and they ask for $1,000, I'm going to be on the floor.
To me, it wouldn't matter if it was old if I still got people's social security number.
Same. I mean, very true. Very true. But even that, this was funny.
But it says, so they were hit in 2022. I wonder if it's the same people. See,
somebody said,
what happened?
Somebody in the chat said, that's the same as one like and I'll get drunk tonight. Then they said, good thing it's old. Social security numbers don't change.
Right. After the attack, LAUSD asked all employees, including teachers, support staff, and administrators, to reset their LAUSD.net account credentials in person at district site and expedite the rollout of multi-factor authentication.
Because they went and wrote already. Thank you.
Right. And so that was that one. And then I think the last one that was related to school systems was this right here. Let me share this one. New Fog ransomware targets U.S. education sector via breach VPNs. So this was pretty interesting to me. Arctic Wolf. Shout out to Arctic Wolf. Fog was discovered by Arctic Wolf Labs, which reported that the ransomware operation has not set up an extortion portal yet and was not observed stealing data. However, Bleeping Computer can confirm the ransomware gang steals data for double extortion attacks using the data as leverage to scare victims into paying. Fox operators access victim environments using compromised VPN credentials from at least two different VPN gateway vendors. In each of the cases investigated, forensics evidence indicated that the threat actors were able to access victim environments by leveraging compromised VPN credentials. Notably, the remote access occurred through two separate VPNs, kind of said at the beginning. Once they gained access to the internet, once they gained access to the internal network, the attackers performed the pass the hash attacks on the administrator accounts, which are used to establish RDP connections to Windows servers running Hyper-V. Alternatively, credential stuffing is used to hijack valuable accounts, followed by good old PSEZ deployments on multiple hosts. On Windows servers, Fog operators disable Windows Defender to prevent notifications alerting the victim before the execution of the encryptor. When the ransomware is deployed, it performs Windows API calls to gather information about the system, such as the number of available logical processors to allocate threads for a multi-threaded encryption routine. Before starting the encryption, the ransomware terminates a list of processes and services based on hard-coded lists and configurations. This is pretty interesting. It's a lot, but I'm going to try to get to the end. The ransomware encrypts VMDK files in the virtual machine storage and deletes backups from object stores in Veeam and Windows volume shadow copies to prevent easy restoration. So that's pretty sophisticated. Encrypted files are appended the .fog or .flopped. This reminds me of with Kodak Black, no flocking. Though this could be set from JSON-based configuration, blocked to anything the operator wants. Finally, a ransom note is created and dropped on the impacted directories, providing instructions to the victims on paying for a decryption key that will help them get their files back. From an attack scene by Bleeping Computer, the ransom note is named readme.txt and contains a link to a Tor Dark website used for negotiation. This site is a basic chat interface allowing the ransomware victim to negotiate a ransom demand with threat actors and get a list of stolen files.
I'm sorry, but the way that it looks is like such a joke in the notepad. Like, it's... Obviously, this is serious, but the way that it looks,
that's how they typically
is,
do it.
Yeah.
But I'm childish because when I first read line one, if you're reading this, I immediately thought about if you're reading this, it's too late. They said, we call ourselves Fog, we take responsibility. Okay, follow this link and the code. Then we communicate. So if you're a decision maker, you will get all the details.
We are waiting for you.
Because the thing is, here is the con is like, there's no honor amongst thieves. Just because I say I'm going to give your stuff back, don't mean I'm going to give it back to you. I could possibly
just saw that earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Even if we go back to the United Healthcare breach, where initially they paid out like the $20 million, the people they paid the $20 million to, one dude took the ran off with the $20 million and on the plug. Get the money.
He ran off on the plug twice.
So yeah, so that's I thought that was pretty interesting. I saw that happen for today, so that was pretty cool. Her parents not doing enough for their child. Man, these people are crazy, man. But I thought that was pretty funny. Did you add them TikToks on there?
Did those come from you? Yes.
Okay, we're gonna try this out. I'm gonna see, hopefully. Let me see. All right, chat. We're going to see if y'all can hear this. If y'all can't, then hey. But I'm going to share the screen. Where is it? Oh, there we go. I had lost it for a second. All right. Oh man, this is funny. Look who you shared. The name tells me everything I need to know. But all right, I'm finna hit play. Y'all let me know if y'all can hear this in the chat. A
I really wish this wasn't an exaggeration. A university degree is absolutely not the way to start a career in technology, particularly in cybersecurity. Believe me, I've looked into accreditation standards. It's unbelievably arduous and expensive. Universities don't have the finances to be able to update their curriculum regularly and still maintain their accreditation status. This means that they're operating on outdated technology. They're teaching you stuff that's decades old. That's not an exaggeration. I have a master's in cybersecurity, and we were learning stuff on Windows XP. And this was as recently as 2022. The good news is if you did get your degree in cybersecurity, you can still get a job. The way that you do that is by doing exactly what you would do if you didn't have a degree. Start with your certifications, Network Plus and Security Plus. Learn your foundational skills in Linux, Python, and traffic analysis. Make an e-portfolio, a one-page resume, and apply to 1,000 jobs. I've helped over 90 students start their careers in tech. My best student is making over $300,000 a year. Cybersecurity is the opportunity of your lifetime. It's happened before, and then it'll happen again.
Mr. Bowtie Cyber.
No. I don't agree. I got a degree in cybersecurity, so I don't agree. And I will say it depends on your school. Now, what he said wasn't a lie. Maybe that was his experience. But the school I went to updates their curriculum based on the skill set that people are looking for today. The school that I went to didn't offer Python when I got my degree, but now it's a course because that's a sought after skill set. So it depends on your school. It depends on the faculty that work at the school. Who's running the school? Are they experienced? Are they in the field? You can absolutely sign up for a program that's going to take you nowhere, where you're not going to learn anything, where you're learning things that could be old, but that's on you to do the research to figure out why you should go to this school. Just like they determine if they want to accept you or not, you need to determine if that's the school that you want to go to, if that's the school you want to apply to or not, and do your research on it. So I don't agree with that. And I was offended that he even said that because I got a degree and look at me now.
I ain't gonna lie. I just thought about when you said that, I just thought about the late great Godfather and his I got a PhD. I thought about that. I ain't ISO'd the whole episode. Let me ISO real quick. So, Bowtie Cyber. I say it's a nuance. I would say a degree can only help you, not hinder you. But I always say try to be smart enough about it. I'm of the mindset now, based on what I know about the job market, I try to tell people if you got no experience, whatever, let's go around to get you like an entry level IT type of job, whatever, get to a decent company that may have some benefits where they can do some tuition reimbursement, or at least you're getting paid more than you used to, and try to pay as least as possible for that degree. Cause that's the one thing that's like the biggest thing. It's like now, like even me, like I had a plan. Like I was at a company where they were supposed to do my reimbursement, but then I got laid off. So at that point, like, I already knew the cost was going to fall on me for that master's. But I can say that having my degrees has helped in my career because when there's been times to negotiate, they'll look at my experience, sometimes certifications that look, most of them not current, but then my education, and then they'll compare me to the peers in the role. And it was like, okay, yeah, we can do that on top of interviewing well. So it can help you in the long run. And then if you want to be in like some type of leadership position, if you have some type of higher education, that can help you as well. Most of the time, most managers or directors have some type of bachelor's, master's, some got PhDs. So you can see that. But this alternative, in theory, works, but it has to be worked more strategically. I've debunked so many times of him telling people in 90 days, go get a Splunk Core user, and what he said, Network Plus, Security Plus, and AZ900, and build a portfolio with apply to 1,000 jobs. So we just saw that how that don't work. And I like how everybody does this too. His best student is making $300,000, which he's not seeing 9 times out of 10, they're possibly overemployed, which is fine, but don't seem like that person went with no experience and all of a sudden is getting paid $300,000. That's very disingenuous and misleading, because everybody don't have time to get no 4 or 5 certs in 90 days. That take a lot of studying. Not only that, if you're getting them that fast, you're not retaining anything. So there are people, like, the exceptions of the rule do not make the rule. I'll just tell you at that. Like, there are different ways you can get in. Matter of fact, I've been seeing apprenticeships being a little bit more popular nowadays too. So I would just say it's nuanced. I would say do what works best for you. I ain't gonna tell you not to get some or get something, because at the end of the day, you're gonna have to have something to help you stand out. And something that I didn't bring up earlier when we were talking about applying to jobs on LinkedIn. If you use LinkedIn, you know, when you go to that company and you're looking for people to reach out to, if you graduated, went to a certain school, it'll say, hey, these people went to your alma mater. And those are people that may refer you to just because y'all went to the same college. Just saying. So all in all, do what works for you, but don't necessarily like just not say do something just because you don't agree with it. It's many different ways to skin a cat. So yeah. that was my take.
I will say for me too, I joined the field with no experience. So for me, I personally feel like I couldn't have learned all the information that I learned in 2 years by myself. I don't think that would have happened. But someone in the comments said, do you think it would be beneficial to go back and yes, and get a master's in cyber after being in a role? Yes, I do. I wish that, I know it sounds crazy, but I wish that I could go back now, because things would make so much more sense to me. And I feel like I would gain more value from the program than I did initially, because initially everything was just being thrown at me and not necessarily making the most sense because I had no experience. So I would say yes in that circumstance. But like you said, school isn't for everybody. That's not the only way. That was just the way that worked for me.
Yeah. And then to piggyback off you, because me and her have pretty much the same alma mater. I just finished, like, I don't know how many years I finished before you. December 2018, I was finished. But I didn't get my master's. So I was thinking like this. I didn't get my master's in cyber. I was already in cyber at the time. So I said, I'm going to get a master's in a broader discipline, because it'll make me be more versatile in the chance that I need to do something different from cybersecurity. So my master's is actually in technology management. And a lot of the courses were not hard to me. They actually made a lot of sense because of stuff that I had seen at work. We did enterprise architecture. What else did we do? We did something that was pretty cool, but we worked on different things. Like now, like, I've had to come up with like statement of works before of like, if I want to do some consulting on the side and projects and deep dives, so breaking things down and using data and all these different things. What we did, like business analytics, whatever the class was, but it was a lot of stuff that made sense that I've had to do at work when I've been tasked with projects in various roles. And that's why I'm always so high on, I've said a lot of times, I wish like bachelors were like masters, in the sense that the syllabus, like, or curriculum makes more sense than giving you a lot of like all these different courses to take, but they don't translate over to your professional life. That's what I've been kind of wanting to get out of like bachelor degrees for a while. So there probably are some programs out there like that, but that's not most. And that's why some people go to college sometimes feel like they didn't learn anything, because it's not specific enough to help them gear towards one area. And that's one of the issues people deal with when it comes to college. And that's why they struggle in interviews. And that's why they can't speak the things that they did, because they feel like they learned too many different things. And sometimes at the school, matter of fact, most of the time, they didn't even make them a good enough resume to help them out with that. Not just had a consult with a young lady not too long ago about, she still was in college or her master's. And I'll say, did they not, you know, help you with your resume and all this other stuff? And she was like, no, they didn't. It was like pulling teeth. I was like, that's crazy. I said, the career center, that's what they're supposed to do. That's what they get paid for. So that's an even deeper topic to even go into when it comes to people really like feeling kind of like let down about like spending this money on this bachelor's. And so that's why I'm like, be as efficient as possible. Yes, you know, certain names matter on that degree, but hey, if you don't come for money, don't like go into debt just on a a whim of, oh, I went to, you know, this big school, I'm going to be, you know, doing this. Like, no, you got to have a plan and be very strategic on like what you plan to do after college.
I want to chime in there because I honestly never even thought about getting a bachelor's because I have my master's in cyber. So I wasn't even thinking about someone going to get a bachelor's degree in cyber. And like you said, with those gen ed courses you got to take, English, history, writing, all that kind of stuff, that isn't directly in line. Whereas in a master's program, that's really what you're focused on, like that one topic, concept, field, whatever it may be. So in terms of a bachelor's, I can't guide you there, but in terms of a master's program, I would say it worked for me, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Right. And then the last thing you probably do, it won't be the TikTok. And I thought I added this on the thing. I think I bookmarked it, so I probably could find it on my stuff. But today, people who are on Twitter, I know y'all probably want to hear me go a little bit more in depth on this. So let me see if I can find it in my bookmarks. And yeah. Okay, cool. Here we go right here. Okay. Let's do this, Johnny. All right. Let's present. Because funny enough, Kevin actually tagged me in this new post right here. So this guy, Mr. Tyrone, I know Erica Badu. He said, anybody interested in a career in cybersecurity? One even today, it was actually 2 days ago, 3 days ago. I have a connection and she's looking for people to train and get into her boot camp. She also helps with resume building, mock interviewing in virtual labs and much more. Hit me up if you're interested. So he started off with this, and I think, you know, I'm going to cut him some bail. I think he meant well by it, but I don't know how acclimated he is to Twitter, especially all the different scams of Black Tech Twitter. The fact that he kept on saying she, he could have said her name and it would help people out to figure out, okay, who is this person? Who is this she? Because we never heard of them. Like, it just sounds like another money grab for me, especially there've been so many people burned by this boot camp word right here that people are always on, you know, like pretty much they're kind of always like, oh no, it's another boot camp, guys, another, you know, another scam. And I'm not going to go through this whole thread. I'm just going to go to this flyer and why people even got more upset with it. Get tech with tech. Okay. Breaking into cybersecurity. And then the overview is, what is cybersecurity? Cybersecurity roles, positions, certs you will need, how to land a job quick, registration fee, $30. Now, if this was in person, I probably wouldn't have, you know, a qualm about the $30, because what is the $30 for? Because all these things I pretty much have answered in a, you know, a free live webinar on this page here. And I actually posted them all today. And so I was actually being funny. I posted my stuff and saying, hey, if you don't want to worry about who's that Pokemon, then check this one out. And I may pull that up if I can go find it. Anyways, so this was that. And I think people just were kind of like off put by. And the other reason why I look sketchy is because this guy was on here, but I looked him up on LinkedIn, and he's actually a legit guy, got a lot of experience. I actually wouldn't mind having him on the show because he's been doing auditing stuff for about 7-8 years now. But they should have had the chick on
the
here.
Person, exactly. Yes,
she had the, you know, the less experience out of everybody from what I saw, but you know. I didn't never get a chance to even, I was so busy today, I didn't get a chance to even look at this link. And then, so I looked at the link finally and saw the people, I saw him, and then I saw his company and stuff like that. And this is, I think it's actually sponsored by their company where they're going to be, they offer like consulting services and stuff like that. But you should have saw, like, let me see if this got any funny quotes. Like, look at this.
Literally, you can Google everything.
So, yeah. And that's the thing, too, when it comes to like cybersecurity, is so many different roles you can do. And I think people just tired of being burned. Like, so the woman and the people behind this, they should actually come on Twitter or do a live stream and kind of like introduce themselves to Twitter and talk more, because to the Twitter, they just seem like random people. And the way he said, oh, they're trying to train people and put them in a boot camp. We've seen this play too many times. And so you're not going to be able to get that one off, because when he says she, and then you go to the thing, you said this person, people are like, what's going on here? Are these people going to just run off of my registration fee? So that's what a lot of people felt like it was given. See?
The flyer is horrible. First of all, let's start there. Yeah. Get tech with tech. What does that mean? Breaking into cybersecurity is one word.
Now, you know what? You're right. The spacing is off.
It is. It's given. Don't pay the $30.
The spacing is off. Let me try to find my tweet, because I want to laugh at myself. I think I'm so funny sometimes. Oh, here it is right here. I found it right here. Let me share it with y'all. Yeah, so I posted that today. And I said, check this out before you pay the 30s, so who's that Pokemon? And only probably millennials and maybe some Gen Z people get that reference. And then I posted this, if you need some resume help. So like, I got a lot of free stuff on here. So a lot of times too, and I'm just saying this as a person that sometimes asks me about like, oh, he trying to sell some this or that. So I done gave y'all so much free game away. Like, it's ridiculous. So I got anything, like people will come in my comments a little shiesty sometime on YouTube. And I'm like, well, have you looked through my page before you say like the stuff you say? They'll say, oh, you only complaining. You didn't even gave them the solutions. I'll say, well, research and see what you find and come back. But yeah, this is the thing that used to come on Who's That Pokemon. So hopefully y'all get it. You know, I know y'all stepping your knees right now. Hands on your knees. Hands on your knees. But me and Des always typically end the episodes off with like a movie line or something that's living through their head, or it can even be on a show. I was looking up the Jackson's American Dream the other day just because she was doing that Catherine part.
Love Catherine.
What line you got on your mind tonight?
I've actually been so my bachelor party's next week. So I've been on my 90s movie kick and like cracking jokes with my friends, and the Players Club is in my head. When the cousin was in the bathroom dressed inappropriately. No, when the cousin was in the house dressed inappropriately in front of her cousin's boyfriend, and her cousin came home, Lance, and she was like, you ain't gonna put nothing on? And then Ebony was like, for who? Lance? He ain't nobody. And then lo and behold, she ended up in that bathroom on the floor, scrunched in the corner, scared, because she knew Diamond was finna bust her head open for messing with Lance. So she was walking around the house in her undergarments when she shouldn't have been, because it was inappropriate. And she pretty much tried to act like it wasn't a big deal. But lo and behold, she was actually messing with her cousin man on the slick on the sly. So yeah, if you ain't seen the movie.
They probably seen it. Then it made me think about that movie's stupid.
It's so stupid.
The actor that played Ezell, when he said... anybody ever told you that wasn't him? Or was it?
That was Ezell. That was him. That was him.
When he said, anybody ever tell you like the father from Good Times? And he put that, he put like a donut or something in his pocket, or, oh no, that movie's stupid. I think I've been thinking about like stupid stuff from like Rush Hour. Like, oh yeah, it's probably me. I plan to actually probably replace this mic, to be honest. I think I used to have my settings changed, but I'll adjust it. I think for me, I got to hit him with that Chris Tucker on Rush Hour 2. If y'all not familiar, him and Jackie, they get tied up by the triads. And then he's asking Jackie, like, what's going to happen while they're in the back of the 18-wheeler thing. And he's like, oh, well, they will do this, and they will cut off your egg rolls. Cut out my egg rolls! Like, all that stupid stuff. And then, so they the thing stopped. And so they finally, while they in the truck, like, Lee is biting the rope and talking about, use them tiger teeth. So when the man opened up the back door, he come in there, he looking at Lee, say, I'll tell you what happened. And then Carter say that. I'm sorry, I'm missing Lee. Carter says that, and then Lee takes out the dude. Man, what'd he say? Lee, why ain't tipping that man roll like that? I did. I said, what that mean? I go this way, you go that way.
I go this way, you go that way.
I would like them to make, I think they're going to probably make one more for the simple fact that Will Smith and Martin Lawrence have just concluded Bad Boys. So I think we'll get Rush Hour 4 some type of way.
I'm going to see Bad Boys this weekend. So, yeah.
I don't know when I'm going to see it, but I plan on seeing it too. Because I enjoyed number 3. I know a lot of people don't like number 3, but I was happy to see it.
I was happy to see it too. I thought it was a good way to do number 3 after so many years.
Yeah. You got any last word for the audience today?
I don't got nothing too fancy today. Everybody have a good weekend and don't get nothing on you. And make sure you tune in to the next episode. Like, subscribe, follow us on social media, and make sure you subscribe to the Patreon. That's all I got.
And I was going to hit him with that, the last part from Rush Hour when he left out with what's my boy named Don Cheadle? He said, I shoot you and say you slipped in the kitchen. But when he left, he said, Gonski. All right, man. I appreciate everybody for tuning in, man. This will be on Apple Music Apple Podcasts or Spotify sometime this weekend. So if you want to listen to it while you're going to work or something. But yeah, man, y'all know what to do. Run up these views and share it out. We out.